Craftsman Days are here at Lowe's with big savings on the tools you need. Save $100 on the Craftsman V20 6-Tool Power Tool Combo Kit, now at $199. No matter what the project is, Craftsman's high-quality, high-performance products empower you to build on. Stop by your nearest Lowe's store and check out the full line of Craftsman tools today. Valid through 6/18 while supplies last. Selection varies by location.
I can't put a timeline on them, and I cannot guarantee it. Not to freak people out, but we're going to go through a lot of earth changes in this next 50 to 100 years. I don't know. I don't think it's all tomorrow. I don't think it's all immediate.
Gary Wimmer, A Second in Eternity, the true story about a near-death out-of-body experience and a voyage beyond space and time into the infinite. Gary is also, in addition to being a psychic, a musician, retired in 2010, still gives guitar lessons. So the music kicks it off, and then we get into his NDE in 1977. Thank you for being a good sport. Take two, Gary Wimmer, A Second in Eternity.
My pleasure, Wendy. Love being with you. Love talking. Love seeing the world change. Love trying to do my part to help it change for the better.
1977, that really changed your whole world.
As you mentioned, I've been doing psychic readings and involved in psychic ability since college, mid-60s, late-60s. In 1977, out of the clear blue, I quit a band. I had to solve some issues with, my lady and decide a new path musically. That night was January 31st of 1977. Never forget it. Unloaded my equipment from the bus or musical traveling home on the road, so to speak. My roommates were there. We talked for a while, and all of a sudden, I started getting premonitions about the things people would say next. The next day, it got more intense because I didn't even sleep that night. I walked into the living room in the morning. My roommate's walking in with the paper, and I read it through his eyes. I saw the headline about Jimmy Carter. He threw it down on the table, and I just was shocked. He left. I walked down to the store. I started hearing people's thoughts. And this wasn't just imagination. I could actually know that I was tapping into something I was unfamiliar with and had no reason to, I had no understanding what was going on or why. Bottom line, this built up over a period of a week, which I wrote about in my book, A Second in Eternity. And by the end of that week, I have never felt so terrified and so enlightened at the same time. It was the thinnest tightrope between absolute fear and incredible feeling of enlightenment, but it was not normal life. That left about day two. I had no idea what I was going through. I was picking up all this stuff. I was able to pick up things about strangers. I'd look at a stranger three blocks away and think, scratch your head and point up to that building, and they would do it. And then I would think, did I make that happen? Or did I just happen to pick up that person was about to do that? And I couldn't tell the difference between creator and witness. And I was, like I said, I was terrified but fascinated. Bottom line, at the end of that week, now during this period, I had felt some sort of spiritual guides kind of monitoring me, watching me. And I started calling them the monitors or thinking of them as the monitors. And it seemed like they might have even hinted that that would be an appropriate word. Never saw them, but I kept feeling them. So on February 7th, 1977, I've left my apartment with my roommate. I was going to go walk somewhere, maybe to my girlfriend's house. I didn't know. I was just terrified and enlightened and empowered and confused and uncertain, but it was not normal life. And I didn't know if there was a button I could push to cut it off because I didn't know where that button was and I didn't know what was happening. So as I paced up north, I finally got on Guadalupe Street here in Austin, Texas, and it was getting so intense, I started crying and praying, and there was a lot of people watching me, thinking, what's the matter with this guy? And I didn't care. All of a sudden, I felt this extremely warm presence around me, and I opened my eyes, and right above me was this huge light. And I remember thinking, well, it's about 6 feet over my head. I had a table, or a stepladder. I could stand up and touch it. And then it turned into a crystal table, and these seven beings were looking down at me through this table, and the light was coming down from their hands. My fear instantly vaporized. It just disappeared immediately. I never felt so, charged up, fearless all of a sudden. And they asked me, I said, do you trust us? And I was mind blown. I said, well, yes, of course, but I could blah, 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 start asking questions. And in one unison voice, they said, do you trust us? And I said, yes. Anyway, after a short conversation, which to the witnesses, I was just talking to an empty sky, but I did not care. I did not care. Within a few seconds, long story short, I was hit head on by a speeding car. And in a moment, I was outside my body, watching my body getting thrown all around by this car. And then the whole city of Austin, the state of Texas, and the whole planet got real small because I was expanding outward in all directions, psychically and spiritually. With my body, saw on Guadalupe Street getting crushed by a car. And I even saw it happening, and I kind of looked at it with a certain sort of jest or detachment or whatever, even if that was me, I wasn't sure. And soon I didn't even remember who me was because I was expanding outside in all directions like a balloon, and I started noticing, the first thing I noticed was the whole Earth from 360 degrees, north, south pole, all the way around, because it was going inside of my ever-expanding psyche. And I realized that that's how souls leave here, and that's how souls come here. They expand in and out from the whole universe. They don't come in like an arrow or leave like an arrow. They go through all time and space. So I kept expanding, and finally I had no awareness of me anymore. It was just pure sensation, and it was beautiful. I expanded past what I thought was the edge of the universe into this star-studded sky of infinite universes. It seemed to roll up into a tunnel of light. Good explanation. A lot of people have experienced that sort of sensation. Again, not aware of myself at all, just pure sensation. And a joyous one, a very thrilling one, and a beautiful one. And I felt like a clown kind of shot out of this tunnel of light into this infinite blue. And that was the infinite mind of the universe. And it dawned on me, I wasn't observing it, I was part of it. There was no separation, there was no self. And this infinite mind either exists with nothing to more powerful than it, making everything exist, or it wouldn't have existed and nothing would exist. We wouldn't be here talking. There's no in between. It's either infinite or it doesn't exist. And while completely fascinated by this, all of a sudden, I felt like I was witnessing it instead of being part of it, even though I didn't know who I was. And I was pulled back through this tunnel of light and back into this universe and started collapsing into time and space, still unaware of who I was. I mean, I liked where I was at, but I was being pulled away from it, like a vacuum pulling up, dirt on the carpet. I was pretty apprehensive. In fact, rather apprehensive, but I'd just been touched by infinity, so I was kind of fearless, even if apprehensive, but still no idea who I was. And as I got closer to Earth, I saw all these images, and here's what you were referring to. The first series of images are what we have been going through for the last 20, 30 years, and we'll go through for the next several decades. And it's this world transformation. I saw 9/11, I saw COVID-19, I saw flooding of rivers and valleys. I was on a show recently and I told the host that I saw the flooding of the Mississippi, and a guy in St. Louis kind of freaked him out. And I said, well, I can't say exactly when. I don't know exactly what's going to happen when, because I saw so many images so quick. And I, rather than being able to predict these things with absolute clarity, which of course nobody can because things can change, I did see, once I see something happening like COVID-19, about 2 years ago, I remembered seeing this golf ball, well, this earth, it looked like about the size of a golf ball, and it was getting covered in oil. I thought it was a big oil slick. No, that was COVID-19 going all the way across the planet. I was touring in Europe as a musician on 9/11, and a guy from Sweden who I'd been talking to ran up to my set as I was sitting in the middle of a song and said, "I think y'all got hit by a terrorist attack." I ran down to the crew room, looked on the TV as the second plane came through, and just almost just fell to my feet because I had seen that exact picture with these people around me in blue uniforms staring at this little TV, seeing that 24 years earlier. I had no idea until that second what that picture was about. I remember seeing an airplane going through a big building. I thought it was a... And I also saw a lot of this violence that we see in the world, especially in the U.S. with all this free AK-47s for everybody who can walk or breathe. It's a time nobody walked around shooting strangers in AK-47s, all this craziness. So even though I saw that, I couldn't imagine it, really. But indeed, in this day and age, we are seeing extremes. And on the good side of things, still, I'm coming back, I saw all these pictures, which I was explaining. Then I saw these pictures of the world to come. And we're exploring space, and we've got, sanity returns. The world may be much smaller. We may lose a lot of people through wars, struggles, whatever. It's not all written in stone exactly how this turns out, because every human being on this planet has free will, and by their thoughts and actions, they affect the overall outcome, whether you believe it or not. So there's a lot of change coming to the surface. There's a lot of tension in everything we see, but it's not without purpose. We are getting the opportunity to see all the flaws in ourselves and in our systems, all the holes in the boat, so we can fix them. Because no matter what the situation is, you can't fix something unless you know what's broken about it. And we are getting a 365, 24/7 illustration, example, demonstration, podcast, whatever you want to call it, of all the chaos we're going through. But it's intended to help us grow and evolve and see our problems, not freak out and get scared. Although I have to admit, I've been through plenty of fear. And even today, as a pretty positive person, I go through ups and downs like everybody does. But our job as individuals is to grow the light within ourselves and do our part to make the world better. We all go through fear, we all go through doubt, and we're certainly all going through this world transformation. We can't change that. We're not going to change that there's tides and ups and downs. We're not going to change the past. We really can't change other people. But we can change ourselves. And when we change ourselves, we help do our part to change the world. So as I'm coming back into my body, I saw all these terrifying pictures, the ones we're going through now. I saw all these beautiful pictures on the other side, which is not a specific date. It's a transition over this century. And I still didn't know who I was. And then I saw pictures of a guy who looked like me playing piano and a musician and a psychic. And then I saw my body right there on the street, and there's people screaming and hollering, a car stopped, panic, As soon as I saw my body, I jumped right back into it instantly. And I'd just been to heaven. There's a long red-haired driver hovering over me. He's terrified. He's shaking me. "Are you hurt, man? I couldn't stop. I tried." He was just kind of a bothersome thing. I'd just been to heaven and back. I pushed him away. I jumped to my feet. I started trying to talk to these people around me, see if they saw these guardian angels, these monitors. And, of course, everybody thought I was crazy. And I would have, too. Not the same thing they did. Well, in no time, they brought ambulance and police and cops. And And everybody's amazed that I'm walking around standing up on my feet. Didn't even get hurt. Didn't even get scratched. You know, felt no pain. And there was 25 witnesses. And the cops are asking them things and coming back to me and asking me how I did not even get hurt, didn't feel this, what the hell happened. And, of course, when I explained to them or tried to, they didn't want to hear that.
Like, you know? Yeah.
Yeah, I felt like the stranger in a strange land, like a Twilight Zone movie or something. You know?
Mm-hmm. That's the most amazing part, though, when you describe being hit head on by a car. That's pretty massive, and not to have any kind of injury.
Oh, I kept wanting to go home, and the cops and the ambulance, everybody said, no, we're not going to let you just walk home. We've got to take you to the hospital, examine you. And they took me to the hospital, x-rayed me and checked me out. And I had one little scratch on my head, and they put a Band-Aid on it. That's all they could do. The police records are actually in the book of the incidents. The little paperwork I have about, you know, the cops and me being hit by the car and getting right up. And,
yeah,
you know, the cops came to the emergency room to talk to me because I pushed the driver away, who's just, you know, freaking me out. Man, you're hurt. You're hurt. No, I'm not hurt at all. Just leave me away. Get away. I wanted to kind of figure out what just happened. I didn't need him screaming at me.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know you hit me, buddy. It's okay. It ain't your fault. Don't worry. Lighten up. But he was terrified, and he filed suit against me for pushing him away because they want to deal with him. So the cops came to the hospital, and they asked me about that, and I said, yeah, I couldn't deal with him, you know. And they asked me why I wasn't hurt, same thing. Nobody could believe this, and I don't blame them at all. The only thing I had to say is, look at the facts.
Yeah.
Look at what happened, you know. Finally, at the emergency room, a guy walked in. I knew who he was. I'd seen premonitions about him. And in fact, I'd seen premonitions about this whole eerie event in little pictures over the week before it happened. I had no idea how these pieces of the puzzle fit together with all the other pieces of the puzzle that were spinning around in my head. But after that incident, it all started making sense. Ah! So this guy walks in up to my bed, and I knew he was a psychiatrist. Told him his name, where he graduated from. He just about fell over. And he said, how do you know this? Have you been a patient of mine? I said, no, doc, pretty much know just about everything right now. And that's the problem. I can't turn it off. And he said, like what? And I explained to him how he and his son had moved all the furniture around in their house living room last weekend while mom was gone. And she came home and didn't like it because it was cut down on the floor space. And he just about fell over. How did you know that? So anyway, we had a short conversation. He said he'd heard about this, seen about people with near-death experiences and you know, not being hurt at all at catastrophe. But he'd never seen anybody. And I said, you do now. Mm-hmm. And he finally told me, he said, well, look, we can't just let you go home. This is just too weird, too extraordinary. We're going to have to do a mental evaluation. Do you understand? And I said, of course I do. You know, I wouldn't believe me. So they put me in jail for a couple of days till they get my brother and people to sign an order of protective custody. And I was taken to Shoal Creek Hospital here, which was quite an interesting thing. As soon as they put me in the protective intensive PICU unit, and as soon as I saw PICU up on the ward name, I thought, psst, I see you. Mm. I was seeing everything in symbolism, the doctor's names, the patients. I could still, every day I'd write down on an envelope the time the doctor would come in to see me because he just randomly walked in at different times. First, and I went to the desk and asked the nurses for a bunch of envelopes and paper, and they did. And every day I'd write the number down, the time, 12:07. I'd look at the clock and it would move up to 12:07. I'd think, when's the doctor coming? Because I still had this incredible psychic ability just going haywire. And the challenging thing was, during this whole period, there wasn't any neutral. I couldn't turn it off. I couldn't sleep. I enjoyed it and I was terrified by it, but it was not neutral. So I had to either use it or deal with it. That's why I'd look at a stranger 6 blocks away and think, scratch your head and point to the stars. One time I was in a restaurant with a friend, my roommate, and he'd seen me going through several days of this. And he asked me, what's it like now? And I said, too hard to explain. I'll show you. And I've nodded. There was two ladies sitting very far in the corner. And I asked him to look around and see if he knows them. Nope. And I said, well, the brunette who's not looking our way, I'm going to have her write me a letter. He said, what? I'm going to have her write me a letter. So we start eating. He completely forgot about that in the middle of his hamburger. But I kept thinking about it. And even though I was eating, I kept thinking mentally to that lady, drawing like a little laser beam over to who I am, the guy in the blue coat over here, write me a letter, completely harmless. And so 5 minutes later, as they were leaving the restaurant, 10 minutes later, the first lady walked by, then the brunette walked by, and she threw a napkin down on my table. And she had written in big, bold letters, why are you doing this to me?
Yeah.
That freaked me out. I was realizing, God, I'm affecting people all the time. This is, of course, before the accident and so mm-hmm. forth. But later I started realizing I'm one of the luckiest people on the planet. I got to see infinite mind. I got to completely step out of myself and tap into infinite mind. Which one of the most amazing things about infinite mind is it's completely infinite and completely unbiased. There is no bias in infinite mind. There's bias in humans. Infinite mind is just all possible creations over all time. And now even physicists who study quantum physics are starting to realize maybe there is multi-dimensions. Absolutely. You know, you walk down the street, you go right instead of left, you've helped co-create a universe in which you went right at that moment. And that's different from the universe that had you gone left.
Gary Wimmer, a quick break.
As you were talking about manipulating or influencing the woman at the other table, I had someone come up to me and he explained a very similar situation where he was able to impress someone with a thought and then control them. And he was that was so infatuated with that idea that he used it, and he was using it to control people. He had an accident, a head injury, and he said, I really want to get that ability back. I used to have it, but now I can't do it anymore after I had this accident. And my thought, compared to what your experience is, he was about controlling and making people do what he wanted them to rather than what you are doing. And there was a consequence. I mean, to me, that's a direct response. He wanted to control. He missed it and he wanted it back and asked me how he could get it. And I was like, no, that's karma. I don't know. I can't deal with that one.
Well, you're 100% right. Because no matter who you are, we do create and experience our own karma, our own world, and our own destiny. Now, we don't have control over everything, but we have control over enough, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And yeah, during my period, I was terrified of controlling anybody. I certainly didn't have that in mind. In fact, I was so oversensitive that it was freaking me out. No matter what I do, because there was no neutral, no matter what I do or think, I was making a ripple like everybody does, but I didn't want them to turn into tsunamis.
Yeah.
sometimes they did, like the lady who wrote me the letter. And to this day, I think, wow, how'd that happen? But the answer is, she picked up that this guy over here is doing something to her head and wanted to show me and never even looked me in the face, threw that napkin down rather indignantly. Boy, did I feel oversensitive. Yeah, I'm certainly not trying to control you. My whole point was it's a harmless little thing.
However, that I think, you know, it takes two. So she had that ability that maybe she didn't know completely until you pretty much hit her in the face with it and said, look what I'm doing. And she's like, I don't like this. And aware,
exactly.
You know?
Exactly. You're tapping into my world, buddy.
Yeah. You know? Mind your own business.
Right. From now on, I'm going to lock the gate a little more attentively, you know, or whatever.
But it says we can do it. That's what I think the lesson in what you have done and what you're sharing is that these are abilities that we do have access to.
Absolutely. We have access to, and we can improve them. You know, as long as we're here in human form, we've still got some challenges and things to learn. But there's an infinite amount to know and learn, and we've got infinite time to do it in, but we only do so much in each lifetime. But the irony of it is, you, all your lifetimes, me, all my lifetimes, everybody's lifetimes, every atom, every molecule, every quantum physical particle, you run that all together, it's nothing more than infinite mind seeing itself in infinite ways. That's the truth that I saw. It's nothing but this, the whole creation is nothing but infinite mind seeing itself. Right now, you're in your form doing your thing, me in my form doing my thing, and everybody else on this planet. But we're all interconnected. The biggest misconception in humanity is separateness. We're all one tree. And I felt very, very lucky for having had that experience. I feel extremely lucky in so many ways because, and this is the main thing, or one of the main things, I had no doubt what I experienced, but I had no idea why me. What did I possibly do to deserve this? And I tugged at that and asked that and kept asking the monitors, who I only saw once. I felt them before the car crash. I felt them. I saw them right before the car crash. I felt them the week before that. I never saw them again, but I kept feeling them accessible to some degree.
Mm-hmm.
And I kept asking, why me? Why me? And about 8 months later, I'm sitting on the porch playing my guitar again, wondering, why did I have this experience? Because it took me a year or two to really adjust to it. It was so profound. And these monitors, I didn't see them this time, but they seemed like they appeared in my front yard, and sort of with a laser, they shot something into my head instantaneously. And at the same time, I saw these screen credits in my mind roll off like a Superman movie, vanishing in the distance. And they read what I was reading at the same time in that one unison voice that they asked me, do you trust us? And basically they said, you had this experience because you always wanted to know. You were always asking questions. You studied religion and psychic ability. You're curious. Well, we just took you there and brought you back because you could handle the truth, basically, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why you had it. It blew me away. It's the one thing I never even considered is my own curiosity brought it, my own wanting the answers. Duh.
Asking it is given.
They let me think about it for many months before they revealed that. So I really, really want to know. Well, here it is. It's like so obvious. I just fell over with joy laughing. And that was the second most profound experience in my life. The first was the NDE itself, and the second was 8 months later when they said, well, you wanted to see? We showed you. I feel like the luckiest person on the planet. I really do. I still go through, like everybody, ups and downs and cycles. But it makes sense to me, and that means a lot, to look out at this crazy world and ourselves and our lives and realize that life is trying to show us how to improve, how to make wiser decisions, how to fix the holes in the boat rather than make more.
Yeah.
You know?
Going back to the holes in the boat, you've mentioned a couple of really profound incidents with 9/11 and COVID. And do you have any descriptions of things that are coming down the pike in the near future?
I can't put a timeline on them, and I cannot guarantee it. But what I saw was massive changes on this earth. I saw a lot more in the United States because I probably live here. But I saw, not to freak people out, but we're going to go through a lot of earth changes in this next 50 to 100 years. I don't know. I don't think it's all tomorrow. I don't think it's all immediate. But I can definitely see sea rise affecting Florida, New York, the coasts, California. I see the Mississippi getting wider. And even though these may seem like terrifying things, and to some degree they are, the very fact that the whole human race is going through all these changes and curveballs is going to help us become much more creative, much more aware. Human beings evolve when they have to scratch their heads and figure things out. So exactly to what degree what's going to happen, I don't know. I saw so many pictures. But there's some of it is inevitable and some of it is perhaps changeable, you know. Mm-hmm. Edgar Cayce once pointed out that, you know, he gave a lot of predictions about the new age and so forth. His timing was maybe a little bit off, but I definitely felt like I saw some of the same things he saw. You know, between politics and money and guns and war, there's so many possibilities. And every day we see a new something scratches our head and goes, wow, I can't believe this. So I'm shocked, but there's 10, 15, 20 things a day that I look on TV and think, this is karma coming to the surface. This is truth. This is humans being facing new challenges.
Yeah.
So we develop new skills. Now, I don't think New York and San Francisco and the coasts are going to be gone tomorrow, but I do think over the next decade or two, we're going to slowly start having to build inward.
Yeah.
And we're going to slowly have to learn to use space and the sea. The sea is incredible. We're going to use more and more of the sea as the Age of Aquarius comes into play. So every day there's little bits of things that sort of, I guess to some degree, confirm what I saw about the changes ahead and that we're going through. But I keep feeling that it's, like I said, it's showing us how to fix things, showing us the problems so we can deal with them and adjust them. So I can't necessarily predict exactly what's going to happen when, and I don't want to give people false innuendos. Mm-hmm. However, there's a lot of stuff we cannot change. We can't change the past. We can't change another person. You can influence people. You can beg. You can't change the karmic trend of the planet, you know, in its 8 billion souls. But we can become more empowered to ride the tides, to see light, regardless of whether the, you know, disaster hits our block or not. I mean, I look at all these people in Ukraine and the hurricanes and the weather and just, wow. You know, losing everything you have overnight. Thank God I haven't faced that, but a lot of people have. And when I go to bed at night, I give a little prayer to the whole world thinking, man, if I could push a button and make it right, I would, but I can't. But I will ask the universe to help empower people. My little contribution, like yours and everybody's, matters. Our own contribution to higher mind, our own love, our own patience, our own hopes for humanity, rather than fears and doubts and anger. If we choose the former, the good, positive ways to look at life, that's about the best protection we can get from potential chaos and disaster. Nobody has a guaranteed to be safe forever card.
Yeah.
Not to be a, you know.
Yeah.
We're all affected. So
everybody has an exit plan.
They do, and they can, you know, there's stuff we can't change, but it's the stuff we can change that matters. And that's within our own souls and hearts and minds, and that's why we're going through this. So all humanity starts looking at what they can do rather than feeling helpless, you know. Like I said, humankind seems to make great advancements when it's kind of slapped in the face. You know,
yeah.
It has to pull up its britches and work hard or change or build a boat or, you know, stop fishing here or stop climbing up the volcano or whatever. You know.
The monitors, who do you think they are?
A lady I met in 1980 named Alice Wall. She's the greatest psychic I've ever known. She was rather dysfunctional in life, had a lot of car problems, financial problems, problems with the kids, overweight, had health problems. But boy, this lady was incredibly psychic. I met her in 1980, 3 years after I had this experience. I told her about the experience a little bit and asked her about the monitors. And she said they are like souls that live in this particular function that I experienced them for about 100,000 years, according to our time. So according to her, they were, you know, souls that have a certain job or levels of, you know, guardianship or angels or whatever. And during my own experience, going from, you know, having a car wreck on Earth to highest mind there is, I passed all these entities. I saw them, just glimpsed at them. I felt them. There are so many levels of guardian angels and higher mind between us on the basement and the top of the, you know, tower. There's a lot of floors to go through. So they were one of these levels of guides, helpers, that have a certain function, just like you do and I do. Now, our function may change next time because nobody ever really dies. We're all one soul living in eternity, and some of these souls incarnated and some of them didn't. And whether they will in the future or whether we'll come back, you know, who knows? The mystery goes on, so I don't exactly know who they are. I'd like to talk to them some more. I certainly extend my hand to them, and sometimes I feel them very vaguely, and they're sort of saying, hey, we did our part. We got you through this. That's what we do. You got other things to help you now, other people, other situations. And I say, okay, I respect that. That's a fair deal, you know.
Yeah. There's a thing. I've had experiences where I've heard the voice help me out of a troubled spot, like as in, you know, life and death. And one point I had been attacked and I escaped. Everything's okay. And I'm looking at the person, and the person is in a place where he could be, he's very vulnerable. I could have pushed with the amount of strength I had in that moment. I could have pushed him off the balcony, and it was a 3-foot drop onto a cement landing. And right beside me, as he's walking by me, past me, I hear, as I'm thinking about, okay, I can do this and save anybody else from the trauma, I hear, karma. And I'm like,
right.
Oh, and at that point, that had my full attention. And the guy walks off into the night. And my question at that point was, who the heck is right beside me and able to say karma to keep me from repeating the cycle? Because at that point, I was no longer a victim. I had my power back. But I would have victimized somebody else. And so that was what I was being shown in that instance, that our actions have, you know, there's always some kind of purpose, and then it carries it forward or you stop it. And at that point it was stopped, but boy, and you know, so I've had these voices at different times when I needed to hear something out loud like that, then I am given a push. And, but that one, that was the most profound because it meant more than just run. It was a, okay, this is no. You know?
I do not believe in the words coincidence or accident.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're words we just use because we either don't or can't or explain everything that happened to make A or B happen. However, everything, in my opinion, is cause and effect.
Yeah.
Everything is cause and effect, including you being you, me being me, and this being our universe to exist in. So therefore, we all have the power of creativity. You're protected. You mentioned something a second ago about returning to your power. That's not an accident. That's a choice.
Mm-hmm.
That's a choice. We all get knocked off base. We all get curveballs and surprises. It's a choice when we go through life's curveballs to realize that's the only way to learn to be a better batter. If we didn't go through curveballs, we'd never learn how to deal with the curveballs in life. There are no mistakes or accidents.
Yeah.
But we do get the choice to decide whether to grow, evolve, or learn, or bitch. Pretty much it.
Well, I just think, you know, you got that same message when the person responded to you and said, why are you doing this? Because there wouldn't have been any other way that to get that point across to you if another human being hadn't come forward and said, I got you. I know what you're doing. That's enough.
What a profound message she wrote. Why are you doing this to me?
Uh-huh.
God, my roommate, for eating across the table, he just dropped his food. We both just looked at the napkin. By the time she was outside, I certainly didn't want to go bother her by apologizing.
Yeah, yeah. I'm thinking that. Yeah, that was like, okay, that was a clear message. Buzz off.
Right. Uh-huh. But one thing I felt is the intensity of every thought, every action. In fact, one time during this experience, before I had the car accident, I was pacing down the street, and I coughed a little bit and coughed out some phlegm, and that little phlegm turned into the whole size of the universe, and then it collapsed right back to the little spot on the curb. The point was, instantly I saw that the slightest little thing can go on forever.
Wow.
Affect everything. There's nothing that's not significant or that doesn't have a presence or an effect. Now, we may or may not have to pay attention to them or deal with them. It's like you don't have to deal with a lot of stuff, and I don't, but I do have to deal with my stuff, and you got to deal with your stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Yeah. Well, George Carlin deals with his stuff. You know?
You're talking about, and sometimes when these, I think it's the intensity of the connection. Like when there is an extreme emotion, whether it's violence or joy, then there's, for me, and in some way, attempt to become immersed in that moment, whether you want to or not. But there's something that I think pushes us forward if we allow it and say, I am open to this experience. And then when these intense moments of emotion come forward, you can, or at least what I've experienced, is being immersed in a greater reality because of that, whether, and it's any emotion, it's anger, it's joy, it's frustration, it's fear. But all of a sudden, like you're describing that little phlegm that just went bloop, that to me is what I've happened with some of these emotions. With the attack, all of a sudden I was in that person's space and I had those emotions. There was an intense feeling of pain, of hurt, of rejection, from the family. And I got that. I didn't know this person from Adam, but all of a sudden I'm in that person's space. And the hurt, that was a huge surprise. All I felt was a tremendous, tremendous sorrow, pain, hurt, and a worthless, very, very feeling of worthlessness. And I thought, oh my gosh, this soul. And so that's what I, and so then when I'm thinking, well, I can do what I'm going to do. And it was like, that's not going to fix anything. And not only that, it's going to come back on me.
Well, the reason you go through this and you have these insights is because you ask for them and you practice it. Everybody in their lives, many, many times, our higher mind, our subconscious, our situation, whatever, taps us on the shoulder and says, I can help. You want to learn more? But we get to choose whether to pay attention and ask for help and ask our guides or not.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think the fun part is when they said, do you trust us? Because just because we ask for a lesson, they don't necessarily give us the fine print of what the lesson is going to entail. Yeah. Like, I want to learn more. I want a lesson. Please help me. And then all of a sudden there's the car crash.
Yeah. You know, we often don't know when we ask for something, how we might receive it, when, if it's not necessarily need, but our intentions, our asking, our seeking, our perspective, that's the strongest thing on the planet. It really is. Because if you really want to know and learn and grow, we get a little bit through life, but if we really want to tap into the gold mine, you have to ask your guides. And here's the reason. Because they know the rule. And the rule is, we came here with free will. They do not have the right to overrule it. But they do have the right to tap us on the shoulder all the time, make us think.
Yeah.
And that's perfectly fair. So everybody gets that tap on the shoulder. Everybody goes through things where their higher mind and their guides are trying to say, hey, you tired of banging your head against the wall? You know, you want to learn, you want to grow, you want to evolve, but we get to choose whether to heed that gut instinct or blow it off. Free will. They cannot force us. Other side of that story is when I realized in 1977 that these protectors, these guides, these monitors completely saved me from getting killed by a car and took me to pure ecstasy beyond anything I'd imagined and back. At that moment, I realized the power of these guides. Now, it took me a while to recover from all the shock of this, but from that day forward, to all your listeners, I talk to my guides and I ask them to help me all the time. And even way back in the 70s, you know, I'm a musician. I have a crappy voice. I had a real hard time making a living because I could never get in bands except being an expendable guitar player. And I felt very threatened by that. When I came back into my body in 77, I saw these pictures of me playing a piano. I barely played at the time. But in 1980, I quit traveling all over the country and coming back broke. Started playing in local country bands here, made a lot of money, big dance halls in the 80s, and was up only 50 miles to a gig and back. And I used all that time to teach myself piano at 33, starting off do, re, mi, you know, scale.
Yeah.
And 3 years later, I talked my way into a piano bar. I'm still a crappy singer and not a good player, really, but I can talk. And I grew up with six brothers, and I'm spontaneous, and I know how to be make people laugh. And that's that. I learned to be a great solo artist, not because of great singing or great playing, just because of attitude. Hell, I got to have some remark, I mean, socially redeemable, sellable value. Mm-hmm. And music is a competitive field. My point is, I asked my guys to help me figure out how to make a living. And finally, when I learned to play piano and started playing solo, I realized, you know what? I don't sing that well. I don't play that well, but I can entertain people by myself. I'm not going to play with any more bands. I'm not going to be expensive. 10 years ago, I asked my guides, as clear as I'm telling you, Wendy, I traveled all around, had a lot of girlfriends, a lot of lonely times, but I never made a commitment. I'm 75 now. 10 years ago, at 12 years ago, at 63 or so, I asked my guides to bring me a soulmate. I don't want a date. I want the right pair of shoes. And I kept asking my guides that. And within about 2 or 3 months, I met the lady of my life. And she walked up and introduced herself to me. It almost blew me over. She's tall. She's gorgeous. She's smart. We have a lot in common. But I had to. It took me 3 years to convince her I was okay. You know, I had to pay back for all those commitments I didn't make. But you don't get everything you ask for. But if you ask your guides, and if you do your part, and if you clean out your fears and doubts and intentions, you have no idea how far you can go. You have no idea how much luck can bring you. I never asked my guide to make me a, you know, big rock star, because I knew I didn't have the hair, the voice, the talent, the timing, the ingenuity, the creativity. I just asked him to help me make a living as a working musician, like most musicians on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
I asked for things where they were in my reach. And to be honest with you, I got about 90% of everything I've asked my whole life, because I asked for things that are in my reach and I do my part. But asking your guides to help is very important, because they can and will, but they ain't going to call you on the phone or text you. You're going to feel their presence. You're going to get more of a situation of living in a magic world where everything seems to be kind of, you know, just unfolding at a nice level, as opposed to panic and fear and doubt. I've certainly been through that. So have a lot of people on this planet, but we don't have to stay there. That's the fact.
Your website, GaryWimmer.com, you do readings for people. So if anyone's interested in a reading, you read stones, but there's a psychic element is also involved in that.
That's true. The lady Alice Wall, I mentioned a while ago, in 1980, I met her. She did a reading for me using 16 stones. She called it lithomancy. Blew me away. I'd never seen it. About a couple weeks later, she showed me how she did it, and I just started practicing. And in a nutshell, it involves 16 stones, sun through Pluto, sun, moon, Mars, Mercury, Venus, Jupiter, Saturn, Neptune, Uranus, Pluto. 10 stones represent planets. 6 stones represent life, place, timing, commitment, responsibility, love. If I do it on the phone, the person says drop, and I drop the stones. If I do it in person, they drop them. And in either account, I read this pattern from the center of the pattern. There's a little circle of leather I put around about, you know, 12 inches in diameter, make a circle, real thin piece of leather. And I see it as a clock. I start reading the pattern in the center as if it were a clock. I read up to 12 o'clock and then around like for 12 weeks. I record readings. I email people a link to download the recording. I don't try to answer every question with exactness because things can change. But what I do promise is I can pretty clearly see what someone's going through and why and what they can learn and how they can empower themselves regardless of the situation they face. It ain't the situation. It's how we look at it and how we deal with it, period.
Yeah.
That's the real truth. But, yeah, check out lithomancy.com, LITHOMANCY.com. That's the method I use. Or you can Google Gary Wimmer or GaryWimmer.com, GaryWimmer.com. My email for your folks is gw@GaryWimmer.com. My phone number, 512-707-0836. It's a landline. You can't text, and you will have to leave a message because I have my voicemail on all the time because I get constant telemarketing calls all day long.
Links are in the description for the show. Gary does give guitar lessons. Find out more at GaryWimmer.com. This is take two. What didn't happen in that initial interview, the one that didn't record, was music. This time, I happened to ask if Gary would give me some music, and he did. The music was supposed to be part of it. This is what he sent. GaryWimmer.com. Thanks for listening.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.